you know, this isn't color by numbers, mm-hmm. right? Color by numbers is not interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it yields a kind of result, right? But it's just filled in colors and boxes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing wild and unpredictable about it. There's nothing alive.
This is Way of the Artist with Brandon Colby Cook and Evan Schulte.
Exploring the challenges of the creative call.
So that you can claim your own path.
And make your life a work of art.
Creaking into this chair. All right. Don't show your work, people. Don't do it. I know most of you have probably been told most of your life, you got to show your work. Show your work. But an interesting thing kind of happens when we step into the creative landscape, the artistic realms, is that suddenly that doesn't apply anymore. It's not that you don't do a lot of work and that there isn't a lot of work involved, but we don't want to see it. We don't want to see the work as an audience, as someone who's just taking it in. I don't want to see it. We don't want to see it. So I'm sure we're going to get into all kinds of different ways in which that applies. Like, I know definitely, you know, I'm thinking about some acting stuff now where I know that this is true. And we were talking a little bit about storytelling, script writing, and sort of literary devices, I guess, for lack of a better term at this moment. Literary devices that encapsulate this idea of not showing everything. And perhaps because in our pre-talk, there might be some criticism of some trends in storytelling today that really could benefit from remembering this idea that, you know, like, hey, you don't need to give us everything. And in fact, this is maybe one of the most interesting parts of it. I don't want to get into it just yet, but how, when you show too much, it actually keeps your audience out in a bizarre kind of way. So I'm leaving it somewhat mysterious, I guess, as far as my opening comments. So Brandon, I'll hand it off to you.
I guess that's the name of the game. Leave it mysterious. You know, don't tell them everything. I do love our conversations that happened before, and sometimes I'm like, oh man, we should have recorded, but you never really know, right? You never know what's going to happen. But we talked a bit about story, and one of the stories that I've been breaking down and just working through is Thelma and Louise. And it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, I definitely would say check it out. But the character Louise has a secret in the story, and without ruining anything, it's never really explicitly said what her secret is. But by the end of the movie, you kind of know. Like, you know, you basically, you have enough of an idea. But the way in which it's revealed is it's kind of breadcrumbed in. You know, you kind of get these little bits of information about what might have happened in her past. And it's very ambiguous, or it's, I would say, more ambiguous in the beginning. It's not totally ambiguous. It's enough to kind of go like, okay, I kind of get an idea of what probably happened, but I don't know the specifics. And then it gets a little narrower, a little closer, but it's never fully explicitly said. And this is important because you have enough information to know what's informing her character and why she is the way she is, but not enough to know exactly what happened, which makes you imagine what might have happened. And because you imagine what's happening, it puts you more in her shoes and you empathize more with her and why she's doing what she's doing. Because however your version of it is more like it's like something horrible happened to her, basically put it that way. But it's your version of horrible because she never explicitly tells you, or the author never explicitly tells you what happens. You have to fill in the blanks. And I think a lot of what we're talking about today is that filling in the blanks. But as a creator, I think you might need to know your version of what happened in Louise's secret in Thelma and Louise, but you don't need to tell everyone your version of it. You give them the gift of allowing them to have their version of it. One of the big issues with cinema today, and you're seeing this happen where audiences aren't engaged and movies are failing and characters are just weak. And it's like, well, why? I mean, we have better technology, better storytelling techniques than we've ever had. We have access to more information than ever. And that's, I think, the problem. We have access to too much information. And you actually... creativity thrives actually on less information. It's more of a just enough to kind of send you in a direction, because I feel like if you strip imagination from the creative process, from the cinematic process, let's just put it in that medium for now. If you strip us of that, we don't get to participate. It doesn't become a creative collaboration anymore. And something you said earlier, Evan, when we were talking before we even recorded, you actually brought that into my mind, which was that when it's done well, when you don't show your work, you create creative collaboration. You make both the audience and the creator co-create together. And the artist has enough, and you pointed this out too, has enough faith in the audience to have an imagination. And I think that when we don't have faith in the audience, when we don't have faith in the reader or the person interpreting our work, we seriously devalue our work and we undermine the experiencer. And I don't think we want to do that as artists. One final note, the whole show your work, I mean, that kind of comes from what I remember it coming from in school was in math. Yeah. You had to show your work. How did you get this conclusion? And math is all about prove how you actually got there. But art is different. Art is, you don't have to prove us. If you get there, in fact, you might not even know how you got there. We don't care, actually. We might even think you did know how you got there and you're like, I don't even know how I got there. And that's the beauty of art. You don't have to prove your work. And in fact, if you try, you undermine your work. And I'm excited to kind of get into how that plays in, because man, it's every art medium that I can think of, it seems to stand. So I don't know where it doesn't stand in art and creativity. And I find that interesting. So I don't know. I'll pass it on to you.
Definitely math is, yeah, like where I think of it is like, you know, you got to show how you got there. And I can understand that, you know, math is a rational brain, intellectual, like endeavor, so to speak. And yeah, it's really interesting. You know, we had a conversation sort of about like the intellect and our other intelligence faculties and stuff like that. And, you know, I think that part of this whole thing of, you know, particularly within storytelling, whether that's in, well, I'll focus mostly on movies and TV and stuff like that and streamers. I always feel weird when I have to say streamers. I'm like, is that necessary? Like TV, TV seems like the same thing, like, or serial. We've got all these words for this shit now. But anyhow, it doesn't matter. Just episodic kind of content and that storytelling in those mediums I think a lot of it seems to have forgotten to trust its audience and tries to show too much. It's like, well, we need to show why this character is this way. And it's like, you know, that's like sometimes... you do need to fill in some of those things, but sometimes you don't, or sometimes you don't need to as much, right? Like as you think, sometimes you just need to imply something, right? Just give us enough. And as you were saying, like it allows us as an audience member to step in with our imaginations and our creativity. And now we're actually engaged with it and involved with what we're watching in a new way. Where it's like, oh, okay, I'm imagining this scenario. I'm imagining this person and their life and this thing that happened to them in a space that's outside of what you're showing me. Like I'm imagining their life outside of this movie or this show now, right? And now, like, that's a creative investment for me as an audience. And it's an incredible gift that you give your audience, you know, and when you allow those opportunities to exist in your work, right? And I think that, you know, that sort of I think that there's a number of reasons. I think that sometimes it's the creators don't trust that the audience is going to get it, right? Your audience is intelligent, and you can look at all kinds of stuff. I mean, holy shit. I mean, a lot of people don't even think it's Christopher Nolan's best, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree, but his movie Tenet, I mean, trying to follow that movie is so crazy. It's almost not even possible in so many respects because of what's going on in it. But it still did well. It still, like, people were able to keep up with it enough to at least say, it's like, oh, that was an interesting ride, mm-hmm. you know, at the very least. Or if you want to look at something that's more accessible from Nolan, you look at something like Inception, which was still a mind-boggling one for a lot of people to watch, but it was simpler than Tenet was. Mm-hmm. But still, like, he's a director and a writer who trusts and respects his audience to a high degree, mm-hmm. right? Even if the audience has to play a little bit of catch-up, right? That's okay. It's okay to let your audience try and catch up with what's going on a little bit. It's better than just spoon feeding everything, right? Because there's something that's a little bit insulting, and also, I don't know, it's when you're just given too much, it's like, well, what's, I'm just become so passive mm-hmm. in what's going on. Yes. And that's not as interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not engaged with what you're showing me as much as I could be. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I had one last other thing to dive into here, just in terms of, yeah, that involvement. And, oh yeah, I think that the other reason why a lot of times creators, they show too much is also an ego thing. And I'll speak about this from my own personal experience of when I've done this shit, when my own ego got in the way. And definitely within acting, right? So in that realm, you know, actors spend a lot of time thinking about, investigating, diving into a character, you know, and there's so many different processes, but, you know, like an actor could fill up, you know, notebooks full of just, you know, journaling, you know, exploring things about their character, like their, and spending time just moving their body, connecting, finding physicality. There's a lot of work that an actor pours into a role, at least one who cares about what they're doing. And the temptation can be there. It's like, oh, well, I want everybody to see these discoveries that I've had, you know, like they need to get it, you know, and I want to make sure that they get it. Right. And it's like a thing of like, so that they can see how smart I am, how clever I am. And I've been there and I've done it and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't fucking work because you become so self-focused mm-hmm. in that whole thing that all of the, for one, your job as an actor when you're in performance becomes so much more difficult than it needs to be. You're already doing something that requires a tremendous amount of focus and attention when you're in the middle of performance. And then you're going to lump on this whole mind game that you have to now interact with as well, mm-hmm. including the interactions you have to have with up on stage. And when your attention is divided like that, where you're thinking about this thing, it's like, okay, I need to make sure I do this in this next moment so that the audience gets this thing that I learned about my character. And he's like, well, in that moment, you've actually stopped paying attention. Mm-hmm. to your partner. You've stopped paying attention to the reality of what's happening right now. And you're not responding to that thing that's happening right now, which might be different from the thing that's going on in your head, which is just an idea of it, right? Without getting too much into that. And so, yeah, it almost never works. And it often comes off as a very, when you hear acting performances described as like self-indulgent, this is typically one of those things that's underneath it. It's like, oh yeah, it's the actor just trying to show you how smart and clever they are in this performance, right? And we just kind of go, ah, you know. And the interesting thing is when you let all of that go, when you're not actually trying to show it, you know, you do the work and you leave it alone, right? It's just more so, I've always loved the word nourishment, which is something I stole from Daniel Day-Lewis, where he says that like all of that work that you did is just nourishment, mm-hmm. right? It's not meant to be brought back out. Don't puke your food back out on stage. She's like, look at what I had for dinner, right? Like it's no. It's just there to nourish you in the moment, but you got to respond to that moment. And the thing is that I discovered is that all of those things that you worked on, all of these things that you discovered, they come through somehow without you having to force it, without you having to cram it down people's throats. It's there, right? And your performance is so much more beautiful as a result of it, right? So I said a lot. I said more than I thought I was going to say. So Brandon.
You did say a lot. There was a few moments, Evan, where I was like, oh, I got something to say about that. And I totally don't remember anymore. I love that analogy. You don't puke your food back up on the table, you know, just say, hey, this is what I ate. I mean, first of all, it would be gross. And it is kind of gross in creativity. Yeah. Like, it's kind of gross as well, right? Like, that's what's funny about it. And yeah, I mean, you ate the food to nourish you. If you just puke it back up and show everybody, it's not nourishing your performance. And you have to have faith that it is, right? I mean, that's, I think that's part of the creative thing. But, you know, it's the same. It's not like with acting, a lot of these acting analogies and how we bring it into acting are very similar, I find, to writing. You know, in writing, it often comes out as expository information, where it's like, I need to tell people about how this thing is or this thing that happened in the past. And it's like, when we talk to each other, like if you're talking to a really good friend and you have a great memory together, you don't tell your friend, hey, remember on July 5th when we did that thing and we both had a good time and you did this? And like, you don't give them that many cues to remember the memory. You just remember it. It's like, oh yeah, that was like in Tofino. And you're like, yeah, Tofino. And everyone's like, what the fuck happened in Tofino? It's like, yeah, Tofino was fucking great, you know? And people are like, I want to know what happened in Tofino. And it becomes this myth. It becomes this story quality that you're like, now Tofino's this thing, right? And it's in the room and it exists and people are like, what happened in Tofino, right? And the thing is sometimes you're going to engage in that and you're going to explore that and sometimes you're not. You're going to pass by it. But that whole little thing I just did, what it does is it kind of distracts the audience because the audience goes like, oh, I want to know about Tofino. But what they don't know that they got was that I just proved to you that me and this other person are friends. Or this character and this other person are good friends. That's what I did. But you didn't realize that's what I was doing. And that's the magic of storytelling. Is like, I'm creating Tofino story. Tofino story doesn't matter. But to you in the story, it matters because you care about the characters you've got involved. But what it did was the way I talked about it proved to you that they were friends. And that's what I was trying to do. But you didn't realize that because I did in this very seamless kind of way. And I think art is... You know, sometimes we're achieving goals that don't come in this very direct way. They're this very indirect thing. And when you start kind of, as Evan put it, puking your food on the table, then I'm just kind of like, gross. I don't care that you ate that. Like, that just, I don't want to see it. And I don't want to see it in that form either. You know, Like, I think there's a lot of struggle with artists. You know, I think we all, to some degree, struggle with not being good enough, and we want to, we're working hard sometimes to try to, you know, rise up to whatever standard we feel we need to hit. And I think that there's this kind of tendency sometimes where you go, well, if I just show people how hard I worked and I show them what I did, then they're going to say, yeah, you're really good. You really did the work, you know? And, I think that's just insecurity. And I think, part of confidence and being secure in your art is about trusting that the work you do will seep through you in its own way. I have this question I ask my clients now, particularly the actors, and it's fun. It's really fun. It's so fun watching them respond, because it's just a stupid question, but it's so good because it's so telling. I go, does a frog have to prove to me that it's a frog for me to believe that it is a frog? And people will sit there and they'll go, I don't know. What's the answer? It's like, no, obviously it's a frog. Like it doesn't have to do anything to make me think it's a frog. It's a frog. I'm looking at it, right? And I'm like, do you see how much you have this kind of doubt, like in this question? But you as an actor, like a good actor, if you start going, I'm a good actor, believe me, I'm a good actor, all of a sudden I'm going to be like, well, you're not a good actor. Just like if a frog came to me and was like, I'm a frog, I'm like, okay, something's wrong with this frog. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the thing about showing your work. By showing it, you actually prove the opposite thing. What it shows me is that you're insecure. What it shows me is that you're not good at this. What it shows me is that you don't have faith in the work. And what is the mark of a good actor or a good writer or a good really artist is that they have so much faith in their work that they trust they don't have to show me their work because they know I'll see it. It'll seep through them. And, you know, good artists, like really good artists, you just kind of look at them and they just are, you know? And I feel like that's one of those things where we don't, like, I always point this out to the actors. I'm like, you came here, how old are you? And they say their age if they're willing. And I go, okay, whatever, you're in this range. You have that many years of experience in acting because you've been acting your whole life. So why are you trying to, like, and like when they start acting, like I'll do this exercise, and I'm sure you've done this one, Evan, where I'll get them to talk about something ad lib, and then I'll start the scene, and they'll start the scene and I'll see them kind of get ready. And I'm like, stop that. What are you doing? You were doing great. We were all captivated. And now all of a sudden you're like, I'm getting ready to say the lines. It's like, stop. Just say the lines as seamlessly as you were just saying the ad lib. Like, we're just living here, right? And they start doing it and they go, oh shit, wow. And I love that experience when you kind of wake up and you realize, shit. And another, well, share one other exercise. I love this exercise because I had a writer go, like, we were talking about dialogue. This was years back, but they were like really self-conscious about dialogue. And I was like, well, let me show you how to write dialogue. Dialogue is fun when you know what you're doing. And it's actually very easy. And I go, what's your favorite color? And they go, orange. I go, what's your second favorite color? And they think about it. Green. And then your third favorite color? My third favorite color is blue. And I'm like, look at everybody. And they're like, everybody's so captivated by what your favorite color is, but not so much your first. They really want to know your second and your third because you don't know your second and your third that well, but you knew your first real well. And isn't that interesting? We're just talking about colors, but that's how dialogue is. It's like, I just want to know what you're going to say. And it's like, where's this leading? But yes, there's more to it, but I'm trying to make the point that we're hanging on to something that's so seemingly meaningless because we think it's leading us somewhere. And so people get all complicated about dialogue. Like, oh, it's this fancy thing. It's got to be this incredible thing. It's like, no, I just believe you're leading me somewhere. So I'm going to listen to all the nonsense that you say. And I hope that you lead me somewhere. And if you think about it that way, dialogue becomes really easy and fun.
Well, it's, you know, going to my sort of teaching in Meisner stuff. And one of my teacher's lessons there that he had, you know, written up and pinned up on the wall was really talk and really listen. Very simple, you know, very simple, but bizarrely a difficult thing to execute as an actor when suddenly you have lines and, you know, it's like this, yeah, the switch gets flipped where it's suddenly, I have to do something now. Yeah. I have to perform, but truly it's, you start to learn that You know, and Meisner somewhat famously said, acting is the reality of doing. And, you know, I'm sure he could probably, it's not my favorite expression to come out of Meisner, but I understand what he's getting at, because in this exercise you're doing with your student, right? It's like, well, it's like, are you pretending to answer my questions? Are you pretending to listen to me? Are you, no, we're really having a dialogue. We're really having a discussion here. And that's interesting, right? Because it's really happening, mm-hmm. right? And an interesting thing happens when you're really doing something is that all of this other stuff comes out. I mean, for actors, it's like, yeah, when you're really just talking, really listening, all of these crazy behaviors and emotions start happening of themselves, mm-hmm. right? Without you having to do anything about it. All this stuff comes along for the ride just by really being able to just do this simple thing. And you know, like Meisner had other exercises that he would do with new students in like the first class and stuff, where he would tell everybody to be quiet and to listen for all the sounds that they hear in the room, right? And everyone would just sit there and they would listen. And you actually hear all of these different things. Like there was a car, I heard a creak and a click, and it was this thing of, and he would ask, like, was anybody pretending to listen to things in the room? Was anybody acting here? It's like, no, you were actually really listening to all of these things. And it's captivating. Mm-hmm. It's captivating as an audience when you see somebody really doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to trying to sell us on something, right? And there's an interesting little thing that has come up into my mind a few times during this conversation, because we're calling this thing, you know, don't show your work. And there's this rule in screenwriting and in movie making where you say, like, show, don't tell, right? But it's the same thing. It means the same thing, all right? Even though the words seem to be contradictory to each other, it's like, no, it means the same thing, because if you're making a movie and you're filling it with exposition, you're just trying to tell everybody all of this information, that's you showing your work, right? As opposed to, hey, we're just going to use the images and just some of the things that are happening and the decisions that the character is making, or whatever, however the director chooses to do it, you know, because that's the art of movie making. How are you going to convey this information, right? But through showing it, that's trusting your audience. Through showing it, that's you not just delivering, you know, some long-winded, you know, exposition on something, right? So I don't know.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Well, just while you're on this topic about, you know, show, don't tell with movie making, one film that I love, and I studied it because I thought it was so well done, was Gone Girl. And I've actually seen the movie probably about 3 times, at least seen it twice. I know I've seen it twice for sure. But anyway, I saw the movie first, and then I ended up watching the movie again. And then I think what happened was I read the novel, and then I read the script, and then I watched the movie again, whatever it was. And I might've seen it twice before. I don't know. But what's great about that particular movie, directed by David Fincher and written by Gillian Flynn, both the novel and the script. Just had to throw it out there. So Fincher wanted Gillian Flynn to write the script, and Gillian Flynn's a novelist, not a screenwriter. Gillian Flynn was understandably a little nervous about doing the adaptation of her own work, but Fincher, being the genius that he is, knew that she would find the right navigation. I guess they probably worked pretty close together. I don't know the nature of it all, but they did a great fucking job. I can personally, my opinion is they did a great job. So here's the thing. The movie, when you watch it, it's actually a pretty long movie because it's like 2 hours long. It's a great movie, but the narrative is fantastic and whatever. And you kind of go on this journey and I feel like very complete watching the movie. I'm very happy with it. When you read the script, you see that they cut some stuff and they cut actually quite a substantial amount. But when you think about it, you're like, yeah, okay, I can see why they cut that because you don't really need it. I would have loved to have seen them do it. It totally would have worked. But for the nature of doing cinema and just audience attention span and what is acceptable for a movie length, it makes sense that they cut some of the stuff out because you didn't really need it to get the point across of the narrative you're trying to do. When you read the novel goes into the eternal world of the characters. And I read the novel after I watched the movie, which is usually doesn't work very well. Usually if you read the novel first and then you watch the movie, you usually feel a little underwhelmed because, sometimes you read the novel first and then you watch the movie, you feel underwhelmed because you feel like things didn't deliver. But here's the thing. I could have gone either way. I'm pretty certain because what the novel does is it fills in the internal world of the characters. But if the movie tried to do that, it would have messed everything up. So they're like, however they figured out how to navigate this movie, because the internal world is such a big part of that movie. It's a great study in not showing your work because it shows you where Gillian Flynn and David Fincher and whoever else was involved in the final kind of creative delivery of the script and movie, how they put faith in the audience to be able to deduct and figure out what is actually going on here in the internal mind enough to be able to get through the story. But it was so rewarding reading the novel afterwards because I got filled in on that information in a more direct way that the movie just couldn't deliver on. So I have a printed version of the script. I have a copy of the movie and I have a copy of the book and I have all three and they're all kind of cherished little gems for me. Because to me, they're three different art mediums because they all are their own medium and they all deliver in their own way without any of them feeling like they showed their work. They just did what they needed to do in their medium. And I just think that as artists, you know, this is something that we want to try to figure out. We want to try to figure out like, clearly the work is there. Like if you look at a story like that, clearly the work has been done and not just the work. Here's another thing. Gillian Flynn studied psychology or at least has some type of awareness about it that is beyond the average person because she was well informed and there is a lot of stuff in there. And like I study psychology, but there's a lot of stuff that's pretty advanced stuff that she seemed to have a handle on and quite impressively so. And so I look at that and I go, yeah. And you had a handle on all that and you didn't jam it down my throat either. It's just evident in your work. I can just see that you get it because I've done enough study on this to know that you know what you're talking about. And I'm sure she has insecurities. I don't know her as a person. I'm sure she had fears. I'm sure there's all sorts of things that are just like every other artist in certain ways. But where I applaud her is that, and I admire her, is that she had trust and faith in her work and she figured out a good place to like let go and let her work speak for itself without trying to prove anything to me. And to me, I'm just like, yeah, you're a great writer. Like I really admire your work. And by the way, I'll say one other thing, and I talked about this on the podcast. This is like a couple years ago, but because that's when I did this. But there's a couple lines in the script that are like quotable wisdoms that just kind of sneak on in there and you're like, oh, that's good. Like, I want to write that down. I want to remember that. You know what I mean? And I think that, I don't know if that's the writer really trying to throw in a great quote or throw in something. Like, I don't know how that works, but I think sometimes what happens is your work just spills in and something just, some kind of fucking just gem shows up in there that I don't even know if you planned on having. And I think that's really cool. So, I mean, I could talk about other films that are like that, but that one in particular, because it's a novel, a script, and a movie, it crosses three mediums. I think it's pretty cool, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out. I thought that was kind of relevant to like this not showing your work. It's like that stuff lives in this realm of we got to have a little faith and a little trust in the consumer or audience member of our creative pursuits.
And that in many ways is part of the journey and decisions that a creative and that an artist has to make, right? Which is like how much to give and how much to pull back. You know, it's like having a lot of the information, you know, and knowing all of these things, like as, you know, as a storyteller or an actor, whatever it is, you know, knowing what's behind a lot of the stuff in it and why people are doing what they're doing and all that's all fantastic, right? It's good to have that foundation, but know that not all of that is going to translate well if you're trying to show it. Mm-hmm. But there might be moments where you decide, it's like, no, this is important that mm-hmm. this needs to be brought across in some way. This does need to be communicated because there are things that do need to be, at the very least, they need to be implied, right? Which is just to give a little seed of information, right? Which is kind of nice. You just plant that seed in the audience and then the audience lets it grow, you know, within themselves, you know, and to fill it in for themselves, right? Again, part of that interactivity that you can create with your audience by allowing that space that is only allowed by you pulling back a little bit, saying like, this is not about me trying to show everything, right? This is a relationship. This is an interaction. And part of this story being told best is going to be best if I'm not showing you all of this, mm-hmm. right? I can just sort of point in the direction of it. And it's just so much more captivating that way. And it's interesting that you brought up this exploration you went on with Gone Girl. It's something I've been thinking about with the Dune movies that have come out from Denis Villeneuve recently, which I know you haven't seen them. I haven't read the book, but I've become inspired to read the book, which I do plan on doing very soon to start reading it. But it's very clear from what I've seen of Denis Villeneuve that, you know, the material is so special to him, you know, like very, very special to him. And he went through painstaking efforts to honor the book, but also as a filmmaker, he understands that you can't just throw everything in the book into cinema because there's a quality of exposition that's in a novel that just doesn't translate at all into cinema. It's not good cinema. Mm-hmm. So as someone who is taking a book that they was a beloved story to them and trying to make that adaptation and figure out how do I do that? How do I incorporate these things? How do I imply all of these things that are in there without it having to be something that I've got to go really deep into and explain? And where are the parts where I actually do have to explain this a little bit somehow to the audience, because it's important that everyone really understands this piece, mm-hmm. right? As far as the narrative line that I'm taking through here, you know, in this story. And I think that there were even elements that he actually had to fill out, because there are things that are great cinematically that in the book were not actually explained in great detail. And he was like, but this is a big scene and I need to show the audience how this happens. Mm-hmm. Right. Because he didn't really go into detail about how this happens. It just kind of, you know, it just kind of happens. And it, cause it's following a different sort of narrative line in some respects. Different right. Focus. Yeah. Different focus. Whereas, because it's not, the book isn't trying to be cinematic. The book is trying to be a book, right? And so he's got to make something cinematic out of it.
Can I say one?
Yeah.
I'll pass it right back. But it's not even trying to be a book. Like that's the thing. That's also the thing about great art. It is a book.
It's a frog.
And it's honoring a book. It's a frog. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I just wanted to point that out, that sometimes your medium It's just doing what it does. It's just doing its ribbit. You know, it's just nothing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the, it's a frog and this is a tiger.
Yeah.
You know, and
we're trying to turn a frog into a tiger.
Yeah. And we can't do it. So, but yeah, there's that, that's been something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is just that how you make those adaptations specifically, because that has a lot to do with it in terms of you just don't have the time to show all of this stuff. You just don't, because it doesn't work, right? It would become so bogged down, you know, as someone sitting in a movie theater, right? It would become so bogged down in, okay, now this thing's come up and now we got to go into all these details and someone's going to explain all of this, and then someone goes, and, you know, because it's just garbage. And it's one of those things that I'm surprised at how often I still see it in any film related show. Is a character steps in somewhere, usually early on, right? You know, the, like some new character comes in and there's like, hey, look, Jim, I know we got history and I fought with your old man in Vietnam. And when he died, I tried to look after you the best I could. But I had a family of my own. And like, and you're just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Like, this is such garbage. You know, I'm surprised that kind of stuff still is in like it. Anyhow, this is, I'm getting distracted by my own agitation with stuff like the kind of shit that still gets pulled in writing and stuff these days. But you know, it's so like, that's again, that's an example of one of those things where it's like, you're showing your work, mm-hmm. right? You're showing, it's like, yeah, okay, all of this stuff is facts about the character, but do we really need that in order for us to be able to continue to understand the story? Right? And was there another way in which you could have relayed some pieces of that information that are relevant to this character and what's going to happen in a way that's not just it being spilled to me in some awkward, clunky piece of dialogue where someone's speaking in a way that no one ever speaks?
Mm-hmm.
No one talks like that. You know, it's like, what? Like, that would be bizarre if you were in a conversation with someone and they just started relaying all that information to you about your own life, you know, like in terms of the thing I just made up off the top of my head there. But it's like, that would be so bizarre. You'd be like, what the fuck are you doing right now? Like, what's going on? Why are you saying all of this stuff? Why are you telling me things I don't know? As opposed to, hey, it's like, yeah, it's like, hey, remember, this is like that time at Tofino.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's totally like that time in Tofino. Yeah, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, all we know is like, oh, some kind of shenanigans went down in Tofino. I don't know exactly what it was, but they obviously had a good time. It was probably a little bit of trouble.
Right.
There was a little bit of trouble, but it wasn't too much trouble.
Yeah.
They got away with it. They had a good time, you know, like, so, and I already know a bunch of things like, oh, they've got a bit of a mischievous side to them. Maybe they've got history. They're bonded, you know, like there's so much information that we can take,
mm-hmm.
and we just draw that we're not even necessarily conscious of. And I think that's part of this whole thing is, you know, and it's not entirely a bad thing, but we do this thing as human beings where, particularly within the realm of art, where we take something in, we see an incredible play or an incredible movie, or we hear this song and it does something to us and we're like, whoa, that was incredible. And then we want to go, how did they do that? How did they do it? And that's an interesting process, right? And I'm not going to say it's without value, because it does have value. But part of the trouble with that is that there's always some sort of a reduction that happens in that thing of understanding, of trying to understand what they did. And it's like, because it can get brought in, it's like, oh, they just did this thing. It's like three steps and that's how they did it. And it's like, that's not really how, like, you're not wrong, but that's also at the same time kind of got nothing to do with it at the same time. You know, it's like the analysis of, I'll go back to acting with this one, you know, because it's the same thing. Some actor gives an incredible performance and there's this thing of, how did they do that? What did they do that gives this, and we're trying to understand it through an intellectual process, something that actually hit us in not an intellectual way. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe a little bit, but typically something that moves us, it's because it's hit us in a different place that's beyond the intellect, mm-hmm. right? But then we go about it and try to understand how it did that to us through the intellect, which is fascinating. Like but to me, it's a different game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's a fun game to play. And it's its own, but it's kind of its own thing. Mm-hmm. Like it's related to this thing, but it also has nothing to do with how that actually happened in some respects. Mm-hmm. In many respects, it actually has nothing to do with what that is. But this is cool. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. And, you know, that's where you have people talking, discussing movies and breaking things down. And we can go, oh, that's fascinating. You know, we can titillate our intellects with this kind of stuff. And there's value to that. Mm-hmm. And there's things to be learned through that. But there's also a limitation to that whole thing too. And I think that it's that process, because then we try and take, okay, this is what we learned about that, and now let's just apply it to this thing. And that's part of that. I think that flows into that whole thing of like, I've got to show you the work, right? Because I learned this stuff. I learned all this stuff, and now you got to see the stuff that I learned, right? And I'll go back to Meisner and I'll pass it back to you here. But Meisner, I'm trying to remember how he phrased this. Oh yeah, he said, acting is not about the technique. And it's the same thing, I think, within any art. And I think that that's a lot of actually what this conversation is about. It's that it's not about the technique. Whatever your art is, it's not about that. Art is about something much bigger. It's about something much, much, much bigger. And I think that we misunderstand that to a large degree, right? Because we're trying to show all of the stuff that we've learned, right? We're trying to show all of this stuff that we know, right, about this thing. But it's about so much more than that. That's all, those things that you learned are just there to help you do something else. But it's not to be highlighted on, right? It's not to be, you know, this isn't color by numbers, mm-hmm. right? Color by numbers is not interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it yields a kind of result, right? But it's just filled in colors and boxes. You know, there's nothing wild and unpredictable about it. There's nothing alive about it. It's just color here, color here, color here, color here. Isn't this amazing? I'm not going to pay fucking money for it, I'll tell you that much.
Well, you know, I think, there's an interesting side to this conversation we haven't really dove into, about where business and art end up kind of colliding. And when you think of the movie industry in particular, there's so much money that's like invested into these films. And I understand the pressure to kind of create something that you can rely on the results of it. And there's a, I think that's where like big budget films often find they're handicapped, like, because there is a certain amount of, we can't take too much of a risk. We have to create somewhat of a formula that we can rely on, because at this point, like if we fail, it could sink our whole company, you know? And when you're dealing with that, that level of demand, there's just, you know, and I think sometimes that's kind of the problem of getting big, you know, is that you end up having to make compromises on your creative outlets, and you have to sometimes abide by certain things that are definitely going to handicap your creativity. And I think that's one of the exciting things for artists who are kind of, you know, before the pressure's on, before it's about the money, before it's about all that stuff, that's when you want to try to take the risks. That's when you really want to play with the art of whatever you're doing. And, you know, test, I would say, if I was going to give somebody advice, I would say, you know, even if I was to give my younger self advice, because I always try to think of my younger self, what did he need to know? I would tell myself, I'd say, you know, boundary test, like see how far you can push the line and see where it's tolerable. And then you might be surprised. You might think you pushed really far and you realize you didn't even push close to the edge. And you might be surprised that people actually picked up on things that you thought they never would have. And also, when you go over the line and you go too far and it's too, you know, one of the early films that I made, like not my first, but one of the first kind of jobs I got was this very art film. And it was this company, you know, it was artists and they wanted to make an art film. And the way I got the job was funny. The way I got the job was hilarious because I looked at the script. And I remember sitting in the cafe and I wasn't trying to do anything other than just be really honest. That's all I was trying to do. I wasn't trying to impress anybody. I wasn't trying to show anybody what I knew. There's none of that. I just looked at the script. I'm like, this doesn't fucking make sense. There's a bunch of questions I have and here's my concerns and blah, blah, blah. And I wrote it all down. And I'm like, it was more my writing on the script than the actual script. And when I went to the pitch meeting, because I had to pitch and there was other directors up against me and like very experienced directors. And I said, the script's problematic. Here's what I'm seeing. This is what I would do. And this is what I think needs to change. And this is like, I think before we move forward, this is what we should look at. And they hired me because I was so honest. And I was just like, and when we made the film, it still like it got distribution. It was a success, but it kind of like surprised. I was young, so I didn't really like now there's some things I would have done differently, but I was really young. I was only like 21 or something, but I remember like, I didn't know how to, you know, how to gauge a few things, but, there's a few things where I just didn't know and audience kind of missed them. And because they missed them, they were like at the festival world, it didn't kind of get that notoriety that some other films did. And out of the ones that kind of got notoriety up against what it was against, I was like, I still to this day feel like our film was a better film, but it pushed that line too far into the art where you kind of, if you missed kind of a quality of the film, you didn't understand what was happening because it kind of worked a little bit out of reality. And where film gets kind of interesting, as we know, sometimes reality is very fluid in some films, right? It's like, well, where's reality and where's the dream and where's the imagination happening, right? And this film really fucking tests that line. But, you know, what I found from that film was that it taught me boundaries about, okay, we can push this far, but we have to bring in a little more context because we're losing people. Like there's a certain audience, it obviously got distribution. So there's a certain amount of audience that can kind of appreciate what we're doing here, but we're losing out too many people. So there's this line where you kind of have to figure out how do I pull other people into this and not just make it for this kind of almost few people that just appreciate film art where they can see the film art, but most people can't. And I think there is something cool about being able to make a film where only like a very few people appreciate it. And they're like, this thing's really fucking great. But like most people just fucking way over their head. I do think there's something awesome about that. But from a business side of point of view, it's a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
It's a total disaster. I'll share one other thing. I made another film. Wasn't one that I wrote, but I helped make it with a friend and it was very on the nose. It was one of the hardest moments I ever experienced, Evan. I was in the theater. It got fucking shown at the theater, which is like what you always want. You always want your movies to get shown in the theater. And I remember there's these two guys behind me after my movie had played, and they were like, That was the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. And it fucking hurt. It fucking hurt. I was like, oh, they didn't know I was sitting in front of them. But I walked away from that and I was like, it was kind of a piece of shit. And I, after I got over my little, licked my wounds and got over it, I walked away from it. Yeah, you know what? There's something about them thinking it's a piece of shit that they're probably right about. And I should figure that out. And so I feel like part of art, you have to kind of take your lumps in the whole process. And you know what? I like what we did in that script, actually, the one where the guy said, this is the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen. We actually had a script meeting and we went down and, what I used to do, this funny little thing, I used to write a little piece of Swiss cheese, like next to anything that was cheesy in a script. It was kind of my funny little way of being like, this is cheesy. Like, we need to figure it out. But clearly we had not identified all the cheese, all the holes, because the Swiss cheese in particular, because it's holes and it's cheese, whatever. But anyway, you got to laugh at this shit. You know what I mean? Like, because it's not always easy, right? But sometimes, yeah, when you show your work, you know, don't be surprised if people think it's a piece of shit, because it is kind of a piece of shit. Like, it's too fucking bland. It just doesn't, it's weak, you know?
You know, something that crossed my mind in terms of all this, and they are related, but it's like kind of going in maybe a bit of a different direction from what you said. I want to say that I enjoyed everything that you said, though. But I was thinking about a great magician, like an actual magician. It's a very different thing to understand the magic trick and being completely wowed by a magic trick happening.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, because once the magic is gone, once you know the trick,
yeah.
And it's like there's a cost and there's a price to doing it. Because if the magician showed their work, right? Like, again, there would be an aspect of being like, oh, okay, I see how you did that. Ah. But now it's over.
Now it's over.
Now it's over. You know, as
and
a
never to be enjoyed again.
Never to be enjoyed again in the same way. Yeah. You know, and all of art is a little bit of a magic trick. Mm-hmm. You know, we're creating a kind of illusion, right? In order to be in the service of something else, right? Like the magician is trying to create that wow, that awe, that wonder, you know, and it really is, you know, like in the few occasions that I've actually had like a direct live experience with a magician where like I was involved with like their trick. You know, because like it's impressive when you see it on like TV or YouTube or something like that. But when you're there in person and you're just like, what's going on? Like you're trying to think like, how did they do this? How like what's going on? And you're watching and they still fucking get you.
Yeah.
And you just go, what? Like it's just like there's this thing that like you're just, it's just, you're so amazed that this thing has just happened. And again, it would be absolutely ruined if you knew how it was all done, right? And yeah, like storytelling and acting and music making as well, like in the limited experience I have with that, you know, like it's once you have that sort of that knowledge and that experience of like, okay, well, what was done behind it, you no longer experience that thing in the same way. And I think that also what you were saying in terms of what you were just saying in terms of like, you know, the movies, you know, and it's a big business and you've got, yeah, it's, that's the constant thing of any artist is that it's like, it's that push and pull. It's that give and take, that finding that balance, finding that harmony within the work that you're doing, mm-hmm. right? And it's different every single time, no matter, you know, whether this is your first performance or it's your 1,000th 1,000th. I think that's the word. Performance, like it's always different. There's always going to be new things that come up, and always these places where you're going to have to weigh and judge and decide on what you're going to show, what you're going to not. What are you going to give? What are you going to withhold? Mm-hmm. Right? And it's all got to be in service to something bigger. I think that not your ego, right? Like it's got to be in service to something bigger, you know? And I think that's, you know, it's interesting. I bring up a quote from a guy named Frederick Buechner on here a number of occasions. I won't say the whole thing, but he has this line where he says, art is one of the few places where we can still speak of holy things. Right. And that's just what we're talking about has added another layer onto that for me, because it's like, yeah, it's art's in service of something bigger, right? It has to be in service of something bigger than money, right? It has to be in service of something bigger than fame and success. It's got to be in service to something more, right? And I'm not making any sort of religious claim to this in or anything, but it's got to say something about us, you know, as people, right? It's got to be saying something connective, you know, and relational, right? That is beyond just like an individual ego, right? It's got to say something more. And if it's not in service to that, right? And I think that maybe that's like one of the perspective shifts that helps with this problem and this temptation of, I've got to show my work. Is it like, hey, remember, it's not about you.
Yeah.
Remember what this is actually about.
Right.
What is this all actually in service to? What is this story really about? What is this story really saying? You are in service to that thing. And hopefully that thing is something that you care about, because otherwise I don't know why you're doing it.
There's a couple of things that just come up. I want to kind of go back to this from the past, like of our conversation, because I just remembered we've often talked about something being like half baked, and I feel like that's an element of this. If you know when you do your work, if you do your work and you fully bake the idea, there's a lot of work that will never be seen. And I think that sometimes like people create half-baked work and then they don't have any work to show, so they don't show it, but it shows. But then there's people who do all this work and they fully bake the idea, but they don't have faith that the idea is fully baked. And so you go, well, I put this ingredient in and I put that ingredient in. And like, just so you know, I put this in, and you're like, it just tastes good. Like, just let it be. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to tell me how you made it. I'm just enjoying it. Let me enjoy it. Right. And I feel like when you start, if someone says, hey, like you made a really good meal or good cake or good pie or whatever, and you start telling them how you did it, it kind of ruins the experience a little bit. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, especially if you did something weird. And like, also like if you have to show your work, it removes the room for you to be a little weird. I think you need you want to keep some of it secret so that you can be like, yeah, like if someone ever watched me creating a story, they would see a guy walking around the streets talking to himself a lot, probably. And they'd see all sorts of weird shit, because like my creative process is dynamic and I love it and it's great, but it's not like it's, I do weird shit to find answers, you know, and explore and it hits at weird times. So, you know, like, do people need to know that? I mean, if they're curious and they want to know about my creative process, I mean, I'm totally willing to talk about it, but is it relevant in the story I'm creating? No. The other thing that I wanted to point out was that I thought is very interesting is I was thinking about focus and how something that happens sometimes, even when we're on this podcast, I'll get opinionated about something. I'll be like, hey, like, this is this. And then you'll be like, well, you know, I actually think it's this. And what you'll do is you'll kind of open the spectrum of it a bit. And then I'll think about it and I'll be like, yeah, you know what? When I was talking, I was super hyper focused on a detail. But then when you put perspective in it, that detail becomes a little less relevant. You know, like I was thinking about one of our earlier podcasts a few ago. It's talking about politicians. And I'm thinking about a very specific kind of politician, usually the head of the party or some like figurehead, right? And I'm like, yeah, fuck that guy. But then you were like, yeah, but not all politicians are bad. And I was like, and that kind of like took my focus away. And yeah, I'm like, actually, the way I'm talking about politicians, if we want to include these other people in that category, yeah, my opinions are, they're watered down. They start to get watered down, you know? But like, what I find interesting about movies and plays and stuff is that sometimes you have these big movies that are about the end of the world and there's all these characters and everybody's kind of trying to figure out how to solve it, right? But then you have these stories that are about two people in a room and talking about their relationship, and it matters just as much. But in the scheme of saving the world, the two people talking in the room doesn't really matter. But it might be relevant, but it doesn't matter. And in the scheme of the two people in their relationship or whatever, talking about their relationship, the world ending doesn't matter because that's all that matters in their world. And what I find fascinating about the magic of narrative and storytelling is that you can get people to look at the smallest, tiniest little thing and make it the world. And then you can get them to look at the grand scope of things and make it the world. And you just kind of have to figure out like, well, what narrative am I telling? Am I telling, because in the story of saving the world, two people who are having a fight in their relationship is irrelevant. But in the scheme of you and your loved one, it might be your entire world. And I love that there's room in art for both to exist. And I don't think one is better or worse than the other. It's just that in context, they both negate one another. And I think in showing your work, for example, if you're doing an end of the world story where there's all these big characters involved and superheroes, it might be worthwhile as you, as a creative, to investigate that interpersonal, very emotional relationship that person has with someone. Just to explore it so you understand the character better and you understand that dynamic. And it might be a blip on screen. It might be a blip in the narrative, but it might feed that story and it makes it fully baked. But you don't need to go into it with us, even though you did all this work on it. But if you skip it and you don't do the work and there's something in you that goes, I should really know how this relationship works, that's where things get half-baked. And I feel like people do things half-baked because they're trying to cut corners and they're trying to like just get things done quicker. And then they go, well, if I do the work, I should show it. Otherwise, the work's pointless. And it's like, no, don't look at it that way. That's not how you should look at it. You should look at it as whatever is necessary. You should do that work. Whether it gets seen, whether people know you did it or not, you should do that work because that's part of fully baking it. One last thing I'll say on that. Someone was pointing out to me, I forget the term they even said. They're like, oh, it's like this thing. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And they're like, it's when you like take flour and you like whip it into like a bit more of a liquid before you put it into like your stew. And that way it thickens the stew and it does it in a very, basically if you just throw the flour straight in, it creates clumps and then you get a clumpy stew that has these flour bits that have not broken down. And I was like, oh, but I feel like doing your work is mixing that little bit before you put it in. But if you just chuck it in, it creates clunkiness. It creates like, you know, something wrong with it. So anyway, man, that's just some thoughts I had. So I don't know. You want to talk about beer and wrap it up?
Yeah. Let's talk about beer. So you brought this one in. Okay. And,
you need some more?
No, I think I'm good. I'm already doing the little dance here of bathroom dance here. And I guess I'll, do you want me to just introduce it? All right. No, it's good. It's been a long time since I've had a honey lager. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's because I used to drink a lot it wasn't a lager. It was a honey brown. Sleeman's honey brown. I used to drink a lot of that. And at a certain point, it just wasn't good anymore. it was just like, yeah, I don't know. It just became too much for me. And I just sort of stopped drinking any beer that had honey in the name of it. And, but this has been nice, you know, like it's still pretty light. But it's got a little bit of a something there, you know, that little sweetness, that little something. And, it's gone down nice. So.
Yeah. Well, this is a brewery I don't think we've had. This is Big Bear Brewery in Kelowna, BC. And they had a cool picture of a bear. I like the can. I like the look. I like your marketing, guys. Good job. Anyway, yeah, I think it's a good beer. It's tasty. It's light. It's easy. I mean, we're heading into spring right now for us. And sometimes you start getting into those light beers. We've been having a lot of IPAs recently and stuff. And I'm just kind of like, you know, I just want something light and nice and easy. And yeah, it's tasty. Tasty beer. Tasty local craft brew. All right, Evan. Final thoughts. I'll wrap my side up first, right. I suppose. Unless you have something.
Oh, I have.
Okay.
I said the last words in the last one, so it's...
well...
You know, but that's not how we do it, you know?
Doesn't really matter to me.
Doesn't really matter.
That's how you go. Go. I don't, but here's what I'll say, is that, you know, I think is... what I would say to the artists out there, anybody who's like trying to do anything creative, is enjoy the work. Like, just learn to enjoy the work and the process of actually going out and figuring this stuff out and creating. Like, learn to enjoy that and do it because it's fun to explore it and investigate it and, you know, and go around and just, you know, to dabble in this stuff, to figure out how to make whatever it is you make. And, you don't need to tell everyone your process. I don't show it in your work. If people want to follow up and figure out how you did it, that's great. But I think one of the things that's very telling to me about this whole conversation is, like, basically to me, this says, just get your ego out of this. Because I feel like your ego is what's trying to say, hey, we got to show everyone how hard we worked. It's your insecurities. It's your low self-esteem. And listen, we all have low self-esteem in some ways until we identify and root it out. So don't give into it. You know, the ego is always trying to get you to give into self-esteem issues. It's always trying to get you to doubt yourself. It's always trying to get you to try to prove yourself. And what I would say is, you don't have to prove anything. You're a fucking human being and you can create something. You're fucking magic. Like, why don't you just trust that you're magic? And however you create your magic, you don't need to show us how you did it. Just understand that the magic process is mostly because we don't understand. And if you can figure out how to communicate something and we can resonate with it and you can figure out how to do that, then you're really getting this art thing. And it's not always easy. Sometimes it's complicated. Different projects are going to cause different demands. Some are going to be easier and some are going to be harder. But yeah, stop trying to prove you're a frog. If you're already a frog, don't prove you're a frog. So if you want to think about it this way, if you're a good artist and you want to be a great artist, don't try to prove you're a great artist. The moment you try to prove you're a great artist is the moment that you prove you're not. So when the ego is trying to tell you, hey, do this so everyone knows you're good, the ego is tricking you. It's a deception and it's fooling you and it's going to make you look like an asshat. Honestly, it's going to make you look bad. The ego is a very misguided form of self-indulgence. So don't self-indulge, you know, and Evan pointed this out, and I'll just, before I pass it on to him. Yeah. Like, I do think getting your focus off of yourself and thinking about the service you're providing and the thing you're trying to do or the thing the art serves, that's the best place you can put your focus on. Because that, when you think about, like, what is the serving, it will help like get you out of the way of like saying, I need to show my work. Because you're like, does my work serve this or does it serve me? And if it serves you, then don't use it. If it does serve the thing, then maybe use it. Maybe consider using it. But if it's just something to serve yourself, you got to get honest about that. Because I think the ego has this way of thinking that you can somehow serve yourself and serve the art. And it just doesn't work. They cancel each other out in a way.
Well said. Coming back to the beginning, you know, where this conversation all began and some of the things that happened along the way, what comes to my head is that the magic happens in the gaps. You know, in so many respects, you know, like in art, when you got to create those gaps, you want to be mindful about allowing for those things to be there. You don't need to show us everything. You need, otherwise the space is just all filled up. There's no room. There's no room for me as an audience member to come into it. leave those spaces where I get to come in and fill it out too, like where I get to participate in this thing, because it is, it's always a relationship between the artist and the creator and the audience. And it's, they're not separate things. It's a unified thing, right? In so many ways, not just as it being a single relationship of, well, there's this person and who's created this thing and that person is engaged in taking in that thing. It's beyond that, because that audience member is a part of the same world that you're a part of, who's created the need or the desire for the thing that you're creating, and you're part of that same world that they are, and you're interacting with the same things, you're seeing a lot of the same things, you're experiencing a lot of the same things. There's this connective tissue always that exists even before the work has even begun, right? And so that, just that knowledge that is like, yeah, leave that space. And there's no rules to this stuff. You know, as much as so often we want and wish for there to just be rules, like there's a part of us that desires just to be like, oh, can't you just give me, can it just be a 7-step solution to this thing happening? It's like, you know, hey, look, there can definitely be some 7-step things to helping you with whatever you're doing, but it's not necessarily going to have the effect that you're hoping it will. You know, it's those technical things don't necessarily serve that bigger thing, right? You might be just trying to shoehorn that thing into what you're doing in the need and desire for some kind of way, or seeking some sort of certainty, or seeking some sort of ego stroke or validation or whatever. You know, just there can be so many things that are involved in that whole process. So yeah, I'll just reiterate again what you were saying. Just like, I think keeping the focus on what is the bigger thing that this is about, that's beyond just the way in which you're doing it. It has to be more than the way in which you're doing it, because again, that's not what we're interested in as the audience. We showed up for the magic trick.
Yeah.
We showed up for the wonder and the awe, for you to do something unexpected and inspiring, and that's all ruined if you show us too much. You take that pleasure and that experience away from us when you show us too much. So give your audience some room and trust that they'll get it.
Thank you for listening in on our conversation today. We hope you found something helpful that you can carry forward with you. Head over to our website, wayoftheartist.com, for more free exclusive material and learn about the show. If you haven't already, please support us by subscribing to the show, sharing it with people you know, and keeping compassionate, creative conversation going.